Gene Dodaro is the Comptroller General of the United States, and testifying to Congress and talking at news conferences in the last several days about the latest edition, the 2015 edition of the high-risk list at the Government Accountability Office. General Dodaro, thank you very much for joining me today. I'd like to start with a new feature of the list, and that is the star rating system. Tell me about the system, how it works, and what the impetus was for you to want to introduce it. Thank you very much for your time today.
My pleasure, Francis. It's always good to talk to you. First, the main issue everybody always wants to know is how do you get off the high-risk list? And there are five criteria. You need leadership commitment to the top people in the agency and throughout the organization. Secondly, you need to have the capacity, the resources, and the skilled people necessary in order to solve the problem. Third, you need a corrective action plan that addresses the root causes of the high-risk problem. Fourth, you need a monitoring effort with interim milestones and metrics to make sure that it's clear you're making progress in that area and you can monitor and make mid-course corrections. And lastly, and most importantly, you need to demonstrate some progress toward tangibly fixing the problem and addressing the root causes and lowering the risk level. And it's not necessary that you have the problem 100% solved, but you need to be well on your way toward rectifying the situation. And so people always wanted to know, well, exactly where am I in that process of coming off the list? So we developed this rating system this year where we rate each of the five criteria for each high-risk area as to whether they've fully met the criteria, partially met the criteria, or not met the criteria at all. So this provides a greater level of specificity to the agencies on the list, as well as the Congress and the public and others, as to where they are. And this will help us in future years because you'll have, you know, sort of measurable milestones as you compare to the prior year's rating system. And it specifies, in, you know, what areas they need to make progress to come off of the list fully.
You made a deliberate effort that I've detected in the last several days as you've talked about the high-risk list this time around, Gene, that you've tried on purpose, it seems like, to bust the myth that nobody, nothing ever gets off the high-risk list. Now, nothing did come off this year, but I wonder if that was a concerted effort on your part, and if so, why you wanted to make sure that people were aware of the fact that that is a myth and not reality.
Well, it's somewhat of an urban legend, Francis, that if you get on the high-risk list, you can never get off. And that's just not true. Over the years, we've taken a third of the areas off the high-risk list because agencies have made concerted progress. Congress has acted in a number of cases, and the risk was reduced. And so this time, since we weren't taking anything off, I wanted to make sure I reminded people that that's typically not the case. Typically, we do have areas coming off, and it's always possible to do that. And I want to make sure that people understood that this is a fair process and that we are working in a constructive manner to ultimately, we have the same objective as everybody, is to remove the areas from the list. We're not going to do it until the problem is solved, and we're going to maintain our independence or whatever, but our goal is to make government work better, not waste resources, improve services to the public, and trust and confidence in the government. And the way you do that is by fixing these problems.
You have two additions to the list this year. The first one is managing risks and improving Veterans Affairs health care. What obviously the events of the last year or so brought that to everyone's attention. Was that the specific driver for you to pay attention to this and add this to the list this year, or was this was there a deeper background here and a longer body of work than just the incidents we've seen in the past year or so?
Yeah, this has been a growing problem for a period of time. We first started reporting on problems with Veterans Affairs health care in 2000, Francis, and so we've been following this for a number of years, and you know we felt that the time was right. You know, our body of work had grown over time, such that we were able to categorize our findings into five really broad problems and themes that sort of underlie all of our work. One is ambiguous policies and inconsistent processes, inadequate oversight and accountability, information technology challenges, inadequate training for VA staff, and unclear resource needs and allocation priorities. So these themes have been underlying all the work we've done over the past few years and sort of came to a culmination in the last year or so. And also, we've been, you know, tracking implementation of our recommendations. And, you know, while VA agreed to take action in many cases, there are over 100 recommendations that we've made that have not yet been fully implemented. And I was very concerned about that. And then lastly, you know, Congress did act to address this problem with legislation and also provided an additional $15 billion to VA in order to help address this issue. And I want to make sure, given the history of problems I just outlined, that that money is used effectively and it brings about the desired changes and improvements to health care to our veterans who deserve to have the best health care and the most timely and high-quality treatment possible.
In the case of an issue like this, Gene, I know folks understand that a member of Congress may ask you and your team to look at a particular issue, perform an investigation or an audit. But once that happens, for example, something like this that's on the high-risk list, do you have the ability to do follow-ups and conduct further audits and investigations as you see fit to continue to oversee these issues?
Yes, definitely. I have very broad authority as Comptroller General to initiate audit work in any area involving federal resources or federal regulatory activity. And so in many cases, the high-risk areas that we've identified over the years have been done based upon work that we've done generally under the Comptroller General's authority, in addition to requests that we've received from the Congress.
I think that's helpful to understand that it's not incumbent on you to just wait for somebody to ask you to look at this again, that now that this has been brought to your attention, this is an issue. All of these issues, all 32 of these, are issues that you can continue to pursue.
Yes, definitely. And in fact, what our experience has been is if we put something on the high-risk list, it will get elevated attention by the Congress, and it definitely will get elevated attention within the administration. That's been, you know, something that we've seen over the years, and that's one of the benefits of having this list and having it had the effect that it's had in order to rivet attention on these most highest risk across government.
The second item that you added to the high-risk list this year, Gene, kind of parallels the VA healthcare situation in that there was a very high-profile challenge that the federal government faced that brought it to the attention of everybody. This one is healthcare.gov, and it manifests itself on the high-risk list. You title it Improving the Management of Information Technology Acquisitions and Operations. And I note here, we'll talk about the recommendations in a minute, because, I think that also parallels the observation that you made about VA healthcare. But what specifically was the chain of events that put IT acquisition and operations on your radar screen this time, Gene?
Yeah, well, there's several factors here, Francis, in the IT area. One, over the years, if you look at the high-risk list, we have identified specific IT acquisitions as high-risk areas. In fact, DOD's information resource issues are still on the list as a separate matter, but we've had FAA, Air Traffic Control System years ago, the IRS, business modernization. And so we had that sort of attention focused on IT areas. But one of the things that we noticed is the pattern developing where this can occur at any agency at any time. And the fact that the administration had tried through the tech stat reviews, IT dashboards, portfolio stat reviews, a number of efforts to try to get a handle on this problem for high risk or moderate risk investments, but it wasn't being institutionalized, it wasn't being followed through and driven across the entire federal government. And, you know, a lot of money spent every year, but approximately $80 billion. The other factor was we started looking at that $80 billion and found an increasing trend that the money's being spent on operations. Of the $80 billion, $58 billion is spent for operations and maintenance of legacy systems. And we didn't see the type of reviews you would normally see to ensure that we were guarding against duplicative investments, that we were driving down costs and gaining efficiencies through better applications of available software tools and other techniques. The data center consolidation issue was started, but it became bogged down a bit over time. So we were very concerned. Third point was Congress did pass some important legislation at the end of last year, the Federal Information Technology Reform Act, which strengthens the roles of CIOs across government, brings about a number of best practices areas, many of the areas that I already mentioned that were initiated by the administration, but it codifies them, gives it a statutory underpinning, but it has to be implemented effectively. And the government's track record in the IT area has been very poor and spotty. There have been a lot of failed efforts, hundreds of millions of dollars, in some cases billions of dollars, have been spent, and the projects have been terminated. There's a longer list of cost overruns, schedule delays, or much less functionality than was originally intended through the programs. And again, like the VA situation, we looked at our open recommendations. Here, in the last 5 years alone, we made 733 recommendations, Francis, and only 23% have been fully implemented. So I was very concerned that while a lot of attention typically is focused on these efforts, it's not consistently focused and it's not sustained over a period of time to really resolve this problem. And it's the application of IT is so fundamental, not only to not waste money, but to improve services to the public and make government more efficient and responsive. So this is a terribly important area. I felt more attention needed to be focused on it, thus we put it on the list.
General, we talked about the fact that nothing's come off the list this year, but with the star rating system, we were able to look pretty carefully at each of the 32 items on the list and derive a prognosis for the possibility of seeing progress made between the last time the list came out in 2013, now, and maybe look at possibilities for the 2017 list. What of these 30 items that were on the list before have shown significant progress where you think they're headed in the right direction, at least? I certainly don't expect you to use a crystal ball and predict whether one's coming off or not. But where are there areas, if any, where you can say, you know what, we like what we see here?
Yeah, well, first I would say, overall, we saw steady, solid progress in the vast majority of high-risk areas. If you look at the rating system, 18 of the 30 areas we had on a list have at least met one of the five criteria and partially met the remaining criteria. And of those 18, 11 have fully met one or more of the criteria and partially met the others. In fact, two areas that are on their way here, we narrowed the scope of the high-risk area. The first had to do with protecting public health through enhanced oversight of medical products, where we found that FDA had greatly improved their recall process for devices and drugs that were on the market that were having problems, needed to be recalled, and also for new devices that they had a more successful implementation of legislation to make sure the highest risk devices were getting the most stringent reviews, and they've on their way to correcting that problem. They still have to deal with drug shortages and providing more oversight over the global market for drugs and devices now that we get our drugs and devices from over 150 countries in large quantities. 80% of the ingredients for prescription drugs come from foreign sources, about 40% of finished drugs and about half of the medical devices. DoD contract management, we also saw greater attention to contracting tools and techniques, so they used less risky contracting vehicles to protect the government's interests better. They still have to deal with acquisition workforce, supplies acquisition, and operational support, where they're using contractors actually in the to support military operations, to have better control over that. There are nine other areas where there's been a lot of progress that I've been very pleased to see. NASA's acquisition is one area. The Department of Homeland Security management functions is another area. In many areas, it's other areas we've seen good progress as well. But the one thing to remember in these areas, even though we have the rating system, in some cases it's not a clear linear path to success. And there could be setbacks in some cases as well. So we have to see. But I think the rating system now will give us a good baseline that we'll be able to gauge progress in the future. But rest assured that we're going to continue to work with all the agencies that are on a high-risk list and the Congress to get as much progress as we can as fast as possible.
You noted two areas in which you've narrowed the scope of the item on the high-risk list. I also see there are two areas that you're expanding. And I don't recall that in the period of time that I've been following the high-risk list. Is that something that's happened in the past? Is there a precedent for expanding the scope of enforcement of tax laws is one, mm-hmm. ensuring security of federal information systems and cyber-critical infrastructure, and protecting PII is the other one, Gene?
Yes, yes. I'll give you two examples. One, we did have a category of reforming our financial regulatory system, and we've expanded that over time to not only dealing with making sure we've got a good modernized financial regulatory system given the global financial markets and the risk, and to make sure we don't repeat what happened during the global financial crisis. We did add housing finance reform to that area in order to make sure that the efforts to remove Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac from conservatorship and to reform the housing finance industry. And you may recall that last year we also expanded that to include the Federal Housing Administration, the HUD, because the government was taking on a larger share of financing mortgages because the private sector had basically receded a bit during the financial crisis. So that's one area that we've kind of expanded. The other example is actually one of the areas we're expanding this time. The history in cybersecurity and critical infrastructure protection would show that in 1997, we designated computer security across the federal government as a high-risk area. This was the first time we ever designated anything across the entire federal government as high-risk. In 2003, we expanded that area, Francis, to go to critical infrastructure protection because most of the computing resources are in the private sector hands, and more of our critical infrastructure have become computer dependent, whether you're talking about the electricity grid, our financial markets, and other very important functions of our transit systems and operations. And so that was expanded. Now, this time, the advent of the problems in protecting personally identifiable information has gotten to be a much larger challenge. We're collecting much more information. The amount of information that's expected to be collected, disseminated, maintained in the future is going to, by some accounts, double and triple every two or three years. And so the number of incidents involving unauthorized access to personally identifiable information at the federal agencies, what they've reported is doubling the number of incidents over the last 5 years, and there have been a lot of high-profile incidents in the private sector as well. And we're saying also the privacy law, which was passed in 1974, needs updating, and we have ideas for what could be done to strengthen that law. Now, the second area we're expanding this year is in the area of tax administration. We've been focused most recently on the tax gap, where there's a net annual tax gap. At last estimate was $385 billion between taxes owed and taxes paid, and trying to identify ways that IRS could more efficiently use their resources to collect more revenue in this area. But the issue of identity theft fraud has come onto the scene in a lot bigger way, and has the potential to be a problem for a period of time until we can come to some good resolution on that issue. IRS, by their own estimates, last year was able to stop about a potential $24 billion in identity theft fraud, but they, by their own estimates, again, missed about $5.8 billion in this area. So this is an area that needs some fundamental changes, that likely needs some congressional support and legislative changes to address this problem. We wanted to highlight it for attention before it continues to plague the filing season process in both now and in the future.
You've mentioned a couple of times reference points on each of these issues where the GAO's made a certain number of recommendations and a certain percentage, inevitably a small percentage, have actually been implemented. I detect a theme there, Gene, and I wonder what the contribution of Congress and the individual agencies might be to ensure progress vis-a-vis the recommendations. I mean, you wouldn't make them unless you thought that they were constructive and useful, I'm sure.
Right. That's exactly right. And I might make the distinction between the areas that I mentioned where fewer of our recommendations have been implemented than we would like, or new areas we're adding to the list. But the areas that have been on the list have actually been implementing our recommendations, which is one of the reasons they're making progress toward those areas. The FDA recall, medical device recall, and new reviews of new devices is one very good example where they fully implemented all of our recommendations. And so a lot of the high-risk areas that have been on there that we've been working with have, you know, implemented partially our recommendations and need to move forward. So the track record there is better than it is for these new areas that we're adding. Also, the Congress has acted. We have a number of examples that we pointed out in our report where Congress has acted to either make funds available, and, for example, in eliminating potential gaps in environmental satellite coverage. Congress passed five new bills last year dealing with cybersecurity, which were very much needed, and implemented a number of our recommendations. We also have had a very successful series of meetings between OMB, the agencies on the high-risk list, and GAO. And OMB Director for Management, Beth Cobert, convenes the meetings, has top-level officials at the agency there, and I've said as long as we have the head of the agency or the deputy there, I personally participate in the meetings as well. So we have elevated the level of discussion to the top levels possible in the executive branch, you know, working with myself and my GAO colleagues to try to be very specific about what needs to be done to get off the list, and hopefully, therefore, accelerating progress.
Gene, as we wrap up, I thank you for your time today. What has been the response as you have taken this list to Congress and taken it to the media, particularly what have folks on the Hill said in response beyond, for example, Chairman Chaffetz saying some of these issues being on the list for 25 years is unacceptable? What's been, though, the deeper conversations that you've had, the tone of them, the tenor of them?
First, I'm very pleased with the attention that Congress has given to the release and update of this list. I mean, this is the first year that I can remember that we've not only had the press conference, but immediately following hearings by both the Senate and the House the same day. And during those hearings, it's clear that the new areas that we added resonated very much with the Congress and the expansion of the other areas. So they were very concerned. Obviously, everyone's concerned about making sure our veterans get proper health care. And it's a very personal issue, and it's one that's deeply important to everyone in the country. And so the general response to that was, was a very good addition, and hopefully it'll help spur needed improvements and reforms that will have lasting effects to help those that have served our country so valiantly. And so Generally, there's good concern, but and proper attention, and I hope that that continues in the coming months and years ahead. As the one thing is a truism in every area that's come off the high risk list, it's required sustained attention and diligent hard work in order to come off, and these other areas that are on there are no different. And we picked the toughest problems in the government to put on here because they need that level of attention, and it takes a lot of hard, diligent efforts to clear these problems up. The final point I'd make, Francis, is one of the reasons also, you know, we're adding these areas at this time is I felt it was very important. These areas are so difficult, they're not going to be completely solved in the remaining time, likely, that this administration has. So then it's going to have to be sustained across the next administration and future Congresses to get fully fixed. And so I'm hopeful that the high-risk list will continue to be a source of continuity over time to maintain sustained attention to these most difficult problems.
General, I am very grateful for your time today. Thank you for explaining all of these elements of the high-risk list, and congratulations to your team on this work.
Thank you very much, Francis. Always good to talk to you.
Gene, I...